When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. What a day I had today. My son and I are learning to ride motorcycles. This is one of those things that I thought was not a great idea. It's not something I've ever really wanted to do. My mind, you know, having, you know, been on the road a couple million miles, I've seen a lot of things happen with motorcycles. But my 17-year-old son goes, you know, I want to learn. So me being the one who goes, well, how can I ease him into this? How can I control this situation a little bit so he didn't kill himself? Doesn't splatter himself all over the road. So I said, well, I'll do it with you. Because I know in my state of Pennsylvania, if he's under 18, there's a whole bunch of things, whole bunch of roadblocks. You got to do 65 hours of driving with a licensed driver. You got to take this course, that. You got to do a bunch of stuff, bunch of hoops. The day he turns 18, weekend course, boom, he's indoctrinated a motorcycle rider, and he can drive off into the sunset. So we're going through this process. We're looking at bikes. We're going through all this. So I decided, you know, I'm going to buy one. We went and we looked at one in about an hour and a half from where I live in the center of the state. And, you know, we're in this little town of Bedford, and, you know, we ended up buying the bike, but that's not the point. The point here is we decided we can stop for lunch. We're going to hang out for a bit, do the father-son thing, which we did. And I came across this restaurant in the middle of Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, heart of Trump country. Everywhere you look, the F. Biden, let's go Brandon, Trump 2024. I mean, this is Trump country. No question. If I would have admitted, hey, I voted for Biden, probably wouldn't have gotten out alive. But we came across this restaurant. It's called Horn O' Plenty. It is in Bedford, Pennsylvania. Highly suggested. The food was awesome. It was really good. But that's not the reason I'm bringing it up. The reason that I've brought this up is because right when we walked in the door, and this is one of those things that immediately, you know, caught my attention because I look for this kind of stuff. Right when we went through the door, we ended up looking at a sign that was on the door. And this sign said, as of starting May 17th, 2021, there will be a back of the house charge added to every transaction. This is a living wage charge and will be distributed to our hardworking back of the house staff. Thank you for making a difference, and the owner's name. Now, you know, this was a wonderful place. The staff was incredible. The food was amazing. But I got to tell you, this kind of living wage fight, this kind of willingness of business owners to go, you know, we do care about our people, and we're going to make a statement that we're going to ensure that they have a living wage. Now, this should be all employers. This should not be something that's special in this one place in the center of Bedford, Pennsylvania. This should be something that everyone ensures that that happens, that, you know, hey, the money that we take in should be distributed, should be shared, should people should be able to support their families. But it caught my attention because, you know, here in Pennsylvania, they're about to raise the minimum wage, or the House has passed it. The democratically controlled House has passed it. You've got a Democratic governor who is going to sign it. Problem is, you got a Republican-led Senate, not so interested. Now, the reason I bring this up is because, you know, Bedford, Pennsylvania, it is, again, one of the reddest parts of the state. Republicans control that area. Republicans who, you know, should care about their constituents, they're going to vote against this. And, you know, some conversations came up, you know, with the waitress who was fabulous. The people, the staff people were incredible. But, you know, these workers get a living wage. They get time off. They get dignity in the workplace. And, of course, the place never has a hard time getting people to come work there. Seems like good business. Seems like a good practice. Now, a little bit more expensive than your place down the road. But you know what? I'm willing to spend a couple extra pennies here or there to make sure that people, I don't know, can support their families. And maybe they can go out and have dinner, too. Maybe just a thought, just throwing it out there, something to think about. But you know, this is one of those moments where you go, maybe just a thought, just throwing this out. Maybe we make sure that people, you know, can support themselves. Now it got me thinking today because today, on this day in labor's history, you'll probably hear it at some point. Eugene V. Debs was arrested for supporting striking Pullman workers. Now, this is, again, this is 1894, and I say all the time, Republicans want to take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. Back to this moment. This moment, you know, Debs led a bunch of workers to strike the Pullman Palace Car Company, and he was arrested for it. So it got me thinking about, you know, are we returning to those moments? Are we going back to this? Because understand, we're in a moment right now where Republicans, through policy, have undone a good portion of the 20th century. This is not my grandparents' country. This is not. This, you know, when they were in the heart of their work life, you could work hard, play by the rules, and get ahead. You could support a family on one income. You could buy a house. You could buy a car. You could take vacations. You could send your kids to college. You could do all kinds of things in my grandparents' America that families today cannot. One income doesn't support a family anymore. In fact, I argue it's no longer two incomes. We are now needing three, which is why you're seeing states across this country going, hey, you got those kids. Those kids, all they do is play video games anyway. Get them back in the mines. Let's get them in the get them to the slaughterhouses. Let's get them back to work. So it got me thinking that, you know, we're moving away from that prosperous working class that my grandparents fought for. And we're moving quickly. I mean, it's quite remarkable how fast the Republicans can move government when they're overlords. The moneyed interest tell them what to do. And this is the weird thing, because, you know, I've been thinking about this for a while. You know, Republicans have basically been bought and paid for it, and a lot of Democrats too. Our politics seems to be bought and paid for. Dark money, super PACs, you name it. But to run a campaign, you need a huge amount of money. So average everyday working people, they don't have a shot. And I think average everyday working people feel that. Not to mention our politics are gerrymandered and things are rigged before a vote is even taken. So when I hear people, we're going to stop the steal. When? You know, there are states, you know, Pennsylvania here a couple of years ago, the majority of people in this country voted for Democrats. The majority, by like a million votes. Democratic candidates got an excess of a million votes in this state. And I think they only won 5 of the 18 seats because of how things are rigged, how the lines are drawn, how creatively our lines can be drawn in a way that you can lose by a million votes and still have an overwhelming majority. They own the media companies. They own, you name it, talk radio. They own the message machine. which is how, you know, an economy that's doing really well, everyone thinks is terrible because they're constantly reinforced. It's bad. It's bad. So what's happened is they've rigged the courts. They've rigged our politics. They've done everything that they can possibly do to rig what we see and think and understand can happen. They have done everything possible to make people think that they don't have a shot. They don't have the opportunity to fight these dark money groups. They don't have the money and the time and the ability to fight these phony, well-funded issue groups like Moms for Liberty. They understand that. I mean, think about it. In the last couple of presidential elections, Republicans have lost by huge numbers. But because of how the game is rigged, because of the Electoral College, they ended up taking the presidency. Trump lost by 7 million votes. And people are still claiming, he won! No. Now, again, the sad reality of this moment that we're in is they have destroyed our belief that we, working people, can change things, that we can have our voice heard. They have. Which is why I think we're seeing so much worker action. Why we're seeing so many workers who are fed up, so many people who have said, we're not going to take it anymore, so many people who have said, you know what, we're going to take a stand here. This is where people, I believe, think they have a chance to make some change. And I've been saying this for a while. The way we reunite this country, the way we pull everybody back together, the way we do this stuff is through labor. Is through our work, is through the workplace, is through making sure that people know that we're moving forward in a way that we think we can. And this again, I keep coming back to this moment that we're in. We think everybody I talk to is, you know, basically in despair about the future of politics. Because it's turned into a bunch of clickbait, a bunch of, you know, the most crazy, obnoxious things get the most attention. It becomes what's the worst of us instead of what's the best. Like this little restaurant in the middle of central Pennsylvania who's saying, hey, we're going to take a stand. We're going to help ensure that our workers have dignity, that our people in this one little place, this one little tiny fresh-erant, that they're going to have an opportunity to lead a decent life. And you know, we went across numerous states during our Working Class Heroes tour. And the reality is we heard this kind of stuff over and over. People want to make sure that their work is rewarded, that they get dignity in the workplace, that they have the ability, that when factories come back, and Biden is doing a great job in this moment of reshoring manufacturing and investing in infrastructure to create those jobs that are going to help do that. But giving people that identity of work and that identity of being able to take care of themselves, that's the message. And if whichever side picks up on this, and again, I don't know. I think the Democrats are doing a great job, just need to do a lot better messaging. But if Republicans ever pull their head out of the sand instead of spending all their time worried about, we're going to fight the woke, nobody cares about that. They care about how they can put food on the table. They care about how they're going to take care of their kids. And all we're getting out of Congress right now is next couple of weeks, all we're going to hear are hearings about the woke. All we're going to hear is, you know, you corporations, you dare to mention the word transgender, we're going to cancel you. And they're all happy. You know, they're all happy. We've taken down Budweiser. What have you done to make people's lives better? Answer, zip. And they're not going to. This is where I keep coming back to. Eventually, we working people have got to stick together, regardless of the red hat or the blue hat. We got to get back to putting on the hard hat and getting back to work. And this is one of those moments. But I want to thank the good folks at Heart O' Plenty in Bedford, PA. I highly suggest their Horn O' Plenty. I think that's what I said. But it was fabulous. And I want to hear your thoughts. Do you know a place that has this kind of restaurant, bar, establishment that says, you know what? We're going to put it right on the door. We are going to take care of our people. I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, good old Clarence Thomas. Clarence is back in the news, and there was a really great article over at the New York Times over the weekend that I thought was fantastic, and basically said exactly what I said from the beginning. We all saw the ProPublica piece on how Harlan Crow, this billionaire, was, you know, being very generous to our Supreme Court justice, paying his grandnephew's tuition so he can go to private schools, you know, yacht vacations, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, top of the line, you know, kind of stuff. And I said, look, you know, this isn't a quid pro quo situation at all. This isn't, you know, one off. This isn't, hey, I'm going to give you this trip, you do this thing for me. That's not how this game works. And I had some people go, no, Rick, it's what it is. I'm going, no, it's much worse than that. It's much worse than here, Clarence, here's a pack of cash. Here's a trip. Here's much worse than that. It's what I said from the beginning. This is institutional. There are all these think tanks set up across this country. Big moneyed interests, you know, who have gone and said, we're going to set up these, you know, these think tanks, these institutes, whatever you want to call them, you know, the Heritage Foundation, the Heartland Institute, you name it, I Love Dogs and Puppies Institute. And they hire really high priced people to sit around, think of bad ideas. They throw big parties, big galas at you know, really, really exotic places. And they bring in dignitaries. And they wine and they dine and they pay them for speeches. All kinds of stuff. It's been going on for years. And look, it's not only on the right. It's on the left, too. But mostly on the right. Because that's where the billionaire money is. Because they understand Republicans are all about tax cuts. What is their number one thing when you go, why are you a Republican? Oh, tax cuts. I want tax cuts. And you go, tax cuts for whom? I'm okay with tax cuts for working people, but, you know, I gotta be honest. So it's, you know, when the billionaires start loading up their money, got a problem with that. Now, this said, Clarence, this New York Times article goes into, says, look, you know, Clarence is from the very beginning. The Horatio Alger Association brought him in, made him feel special, gave him access to billionaires, wined him, dined him, did all kinds of stuff, and created him. This is back when he was, you know, he was just the head of the EEOC. He was just a lawyer. They brought him in. They cultivated him. They had him from the beginning. It's not something that just happened when he got the name. They created him, just as they've done with all of those conservative justices. It's not that, hey, I want you to do this for me. It's, I know you're going to do this for me without me asking you, because I know what you're going to think before you do, because we've created you. This is what the Federalist Society, this is what all of those big money groups are all about. So when you hear this, well, you know, he's got this trip. Yeah, that's not what did it. That's just icing on the cake. He's been in their pocket from day one. Let's go to the phones. Got Jim on line one from Chicago. Jim, how are we doing? Jim, listen to me, not the radio.
Hello?
Jim, how are you? What's on your mind?
I'm good. You know, I have a comment to make about the all this people getting all upset on the right about the woke. You know, I would like to say to my Republican friends or anybody, take out your phone or look at a dictionary and look up the word woke. And basically what it says everywhere you look is someone who is alert to racial prejudice and discrimination. I certainly think that anybody with a half a brain knows that this country has been like that for a long time, and it still is to a degree. And I just really get a kick out of the way these Republicans could take a word and turn it into something totally different than what it actually means. They're just nuts, Rick. They're nuts. And that's just really all I had to say. It just bothers me that they can take a word and bastardize it and turn it into everything else, but basically all it means. Anybody with a half a brain would know that there certainly is racial injustice and prejudice.
No, I mean, injustice overall. I mean, when I think of woke, you know, it's about injustices. It's about helping those who are down, those who need help, those who are being abused. You know, throw all that in there. It's about being aware, as you've said. But again, this isn't about the issues. This is about creating a buzzword to create division so they can divide and conquer and tear us apart. So it's that dog whistle that they love throwing out to get their audience, their groups, to foam at the mouth like Pavlovian dogs. And look, it's effective. You just, hey, the woke are coming. And they understand.
And one other comment, too, if I could, about Donald Trump in a way. You know, it's amazing, all these people like Trump, and I don't really talk about it, a cult at all. I've tried this on a couple of my friends and family. When I say this to them, they kind of like are lost for words. And this is what I ask them. What is it about Donald Trump? What redeeming qualities does he have that you would like to see your children, grandchildren, or people in your family emulate? Is it the conspiracy nut job? Is the chronic lying? Is it the way he talks about women and the sexual harassment? Maybe it's about all the nice nicknames that he gives people and belittle people. I would just ask your friends this. Ask them just, you know, what is they find about Donald Trump that they would like their family to emulate? And if they're anything like the people in my family, that'll leave them with a dumb look on their face.
Yeah, rich. When I've asked that question, he's rich. He's powerful. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call, buddy. No, I mean, it's just, that's the answer that I get because I've asked that question, because I agree with you 100%. You know, I don't, there are no qualities that parents who give a rat's behind, I think would actually answer. No, we want a bully. Because honestly, I think a lot of people like him because he is a bully. They like him because, you know, he talks like I want to. He acts like they want to. But they can't. And they're living vicariously through their bully. And I agree with Governor Pritzker. I think he hit it right, that these are people who just haven't evolved, that they just don't have the capacity, the mental capacity to feel compassion or empathy or those things of understanding someone else. And look, I've said it 1,000 times. I don't understand a lot of the things that are, you know, the transgender stuff, all the stuff that's out. I don't understand it, but you know what? I don't have to. I want people to live their best lives. I want us as a country to live up to that, you know, that ideal of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That's the important thing to me. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got lots to get to. Over the weekend, you may have seen it. The Teamsters were doing a practice strike. They were, out there mulling, out there on the picket line, showing what's going to come to UPS if they don't come back to the table and actually actually bargain. So we come back and talk about that. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So over the weekend, and we talked about this on Friday, over the weekend, Teamsters across the country went out and did an informational picket. Solidarity Saturday. Across the country, you saw people going, hey, this is what it's going to look like, Carol. This is what it's going to look like, UPS, if we can't come to a reasonable agreement. And this is the weird thing. We're in this weird moment where you've got this company wildly profitable, $13.9 billion in profit, and expecting cost neutral contracts. No, we're not sharing. None for you. That's why I've asked Ricky Schreiner to come talk with us. She's a full-time combo UPS employee, also a Teamster shop steward there at her facility out in the Minnesota, Eagan, Minneapolis area. Ricky, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about Saturday. What went on over the weekend?
You know, Saturday we had a practice picket outside of the Minneapolis facility. We had an amazing turnout. We had, not only did we have UPS Teamsters, we had Teamsters from other companies. We had Nurses Union. We had the Starbucks Union. We had local politicians. We had a lot of support from the community. It was a good showing. It was show solidarity and show UPS that we're not afraid.
No, and this is one of those things, and I ask the question all the time. Nobody wants to go on strike. I mean, practice is one thing, but actually doing the real thing, nobody really wants to do that, right?
That is correct. If we do it, we're being forced to do it. It's UPS is holding the cards right now. If we go on strike, it's because that's what they've decided. Nobody wants to. We all have families to support. This is the last thing we want.
Now, you know, as I said a moment ago, you got Carol Tomei, I think that's how you pronounce her name, you know, making millions of dollars. You've got the executives making huge amounts of money. They've spent billions on stock buybacks. They've done everything to flaunt how much money that they've made off of your labor. And the fact that it's not coming your way, I think we as working people across the country should have a problem with.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they made record profits during the height of the pandemic. And we were working holidays and weekends to make sure that company stayed afloat and to keep up with the demand. And this is what we get. It's a slap in the face.
So back to the hero, back to the essential worker, back to all of that stuff. Nice words, but no dignity and respect in the paycheck. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely not. You know, it's like everything that we've been put through the last couple of years, they have been built off. UPS is the largest, most successful shipping company. There's no doubt about that. And it's because they've built it off of union labor. We are dedicated to our jobs. We have put everything into that job to make it a successful company. And for them to come back to us and just, you know, here's some chump change, thanks for the effort, is an insult.
Now, as I understand, and again, I've been following this very closely, UPS is out there saying, hey, you know, those drivers, you know, those package drivers, they make $93,000 a year. Those feeder drivers make, you know, upwards of $100,000 a year. They're making huge money. What do you say to that?
Well, they got what they paid for. Once again, they are the most successful shipping company. You pay your people well, they will take care of you. You take care of us, we will take care of you.
Now, I used to work for a company years ago that, you know, they used to tout the fact that they had a 1% turnover rate. I was a unionized trucking company. That was a selling point. We've got a 1% turnover rate. We've got dedicated quality employees doing the best job possible. And we've got this, we don't have the turnover that all those other people have. Is it the same way at UPS?
I don't know if they tout that or not. They probably should. I mean, like I said, people stay at UPS because they know it's a job that they can retire from, because they are paid well. They are a part of a union. They have a union backing. They have good insurance. They have a retirement. They can retire with dignity. That is why people invest their time and effort into UPS. That's why people stay at UPS. Yeah.
Now let's talk about what the other part of this. I mean, while the package drivers that everyone comes in contact with and everybody loves, everyone but loves the brown guys and the brown trucks and the brown women coming through with their packages. Everyone loves them. The part-timers, though, I'm not seeing the love there. I know during the pandemic, where I am here locally, they were paying those folks who load your package cars and load the trucks and unload the trucks and all that. They were paying them $24 an hour, which is a reasonable wage for doing the kind of work that they do, only to arbitrarily on one day yank about $10 an hour away from them because they could. To me, this seems like an even bigger slap in the face than all the rest. What do you say to that division that they always play on between the full-time folks and the part-time workers?
You know, and we see this, you know, they try to pit us against each other, you know, well, you know, the full-timers, and why would you want them to make as much as you do? First of all, if you don't pay them enough, they're not going to come work there. They can go flip burgers for $20 an hour. Like, you have to make it appealing to them. You have to give them a reason to come in there and stay. And as far as the full-timers go, if you want to get days off and you want to take vacations, we're going to need those part-timers in that building.
That's an excellent point. Now, how long have you been a UPS employee?
Since September of 1999.
Wow. Good on you. So over that time, and that's a lot of years, have you seen the membership as united as it is right now? Because I've been a Teamster over 30 years. I look at what I'm seeing going on across the country as I've never seen before, not even in 97, when they struck in 97. So are you seeing the same thing?
I am. You know, I think with this new leadership that's come in, it's brought in kind of a vitality. Not only that, it's bringing in a better communication. You know, where they're utilizing social media. We have our own app now, so you can keep track of what's going on with the contract. Plus, you know, there was a how to save money for the strike and just informational, you know, just doing a better job of being out up front with the membership.
Oh, it's all
and I think that's kind of, it's exciting people. It's, you know, they feel more involved. They feel like more part of the union.
Yeah. Do you think coming out of the pandemic, when, you know, again, you were labeled hero, essential heroes and frontline heroes and all of that, do you think that plays into what we're seeing now, that people internalize the fact that they did really save this country? They did what they were asked. They rose to the occasion. They took on the danger. They did all of that stuff. And they're just not feeling in this moment respected. Do you see that being part of this?
Absolutely. You know, we put our hearts and souls into this. We were working 6-hour days, holidays. We were put, you know, it's not, there was a lot of people coming out of this that are having a lot of mental health issues because it was such a strain on families and relationships. We put everything on the line and we, you know, within my local alone, I think we lost 5 employees to COVID.
Wow.
This was no joke. We put our lives on the line to make sure that we kept the economy running and people got with the goods and services that they needed. And now the people are looking back and saying, you know what? UPS really came out for us. And so we need to come out for them.
I'm with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Ricky Schreiner. She's a full-time combo worker at UPS. She's also a shop steward with the Teamsters. Wow, 98. Good for you. If you want more information, teamsters638.com is the website if you want to take a look at that. Now, I always say the bigger the picket line, the more people on the picket line, the shorter the strike, the community being a huge part of this. Over the weekend, did you see that community support? And are you doing some outreach to try and bring community members in? Because, 340,000 workers across the country is a big, big number. But if you could multiply that by 10, this would be an even bigger event.
So I agree. I think that we are definitely seeing support. We're seeing kind of an uptick in labor, interest in union labor. We're seeing, you know, the workers' rights. People are more interested in, you know, we've gone through a generation where union labor has been decimated. And this younger generation coming in is kind of sick and tired of being treated like trash. And so you're seeing a lot of people, like, interested in wanting to join unions and be part of that movement. And I think we're seeing that in our communities. You know, people are like, hey, you know what? I want to be part of this. I want to do something about my workplace. So we're seeing a lot of people who aren't union, you know, stepping up and wanting to be involved in this.
This is where I said, Ricky, I think this could be one of, this could be, I don't know, I don't have a crystal ball, but this could be one of those moments historically we'll look back in 20, 30, 50 years and go, This was a turning point, much like when the Teamsters talk about the freight industry, the 1934 strike in Minneapolis, how that turned things around. This could be one of those moments for this industry to raise up the conditions, and not just for you and your coworkers, but also for the Amazon drivers and the FedEx drivers and all DHL and all the other ones that are out there working for subpar wages and benefits.
Absolutely. You know, I work a lot with Amazon employees, just trying to educate them on their rights. And it is appalling how they get treated. You know, it's more than just a slap in the face, but it's really quite depressing that companies can treat employees like this.
It's abusive.
If UPS would, they would.
Yeah, it's abusive. No, I mean, it is what it is. And this is where, you know, as you and I, as union members, and look, having, you know, I've been a little bit longer, but having the experience that we have, we would never put up with that kind of treatment and behavior. And yet, you know, we've allowed it to happen to others. So this is one of those moments that I think this could be. That's why I think that historically this could be one of those moments.
I agree. I think people are going to see it and say, you know what, we deserve this too. Yeah, and this is what we have to fight to get it.
So last line of question I've got for you, because, you know, there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of stuff. We don't know what's going on at the bargaining table, and I know you don't know either. What's the sense that you get from local leadership, from you know, other folks that you talk to, of which way this may go? I know this was a practice. I know this was a show of solidarity and a show of strength. But where's the sentiment when you were talking to people on the line of where they think this is going to go?
You know, I think, and this goes with all things, all you can do is hope for the best, but plan for the worst.
Right.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen, but we just have to be prepared when it does.
Well, if it does, if it does end up into a strike, I'd love to have you come back and share more as this goes on down the line. We're with you. We support you. Wish you the best. And I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ricky. I appreciate it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. Right back after this.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the day that labor leader Eugene V. Debs was arrested for supporting the strike of Pullman Palace Car Company workers. In May, the workers who made the popular train sleeping cars had walked off the job. George Pullman had slashed the workers' wages but kept the rents in his company town steady. The striking workers called on Eugene Debs to support their strike. Debs had made a name for himself in the labor movement by successfully founding the American Railway Union. The union joined together railroad workers in an unprecedented force of solidarity across job types. In June, the union voted to boycott Pullman in support of the train car makers. As rail traffic ground to a halt, the federal government moved in to end the strike. Federal troops were called out. A federal court issued an injunction against Debs and the boycott. The basis for Debs' arrest was the claim that the boycott interfered with the delivery of the U.S. mail by the trains. Debs served a 6-month jail sentence in Woodstock, Illinois. His case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which decided in favor of the injunctions. When Debs was released from prison, he delivered a speech he called Liberty. In it, he declared, quote, "The people have seen the money power practicing at every art of duplicity, growing more arrogant and despotic as it robbed one and crushed another, building its fortification of the bones of its victims and its palaces out of the profits of its piracies." The Pullman strike and the American Railway Union were crushed, and injunctions became a powerful tool against the labor movement.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I love this. I gotta tell you, this is one of those things that just drives me off a wall. Evidently, Joe Biden's got a mean streak. Joe Biden's mean. Joe Biden's angry. Joe Biden swears. Really? Joe Biden swears? Don't you remember when Obama thing came through? Remember when Obama came through and Biden said, you know, this is a BFD? You kind of knew back then. But evidently, according to reports, and it's just coming out now, breaking news from the Washington Examiner. Breaking news. Biden yells at staff members. Biden yells at staff members. Biden says the F word. Biden says, don't BS me. Biden says, how the blank do you not know this? Biden says, get the blank out of here. Really? Yeah, evidently angry. And what the weird thing is if you listen to conservatives, you got Sleepy Joe, you got, doddering old fool, you sleep all the time. I don't know which narrative to buy into. I just don't. Because I went back and I looked at some Washington Examiner headlines. You know, Sleepy Joe Biden appears denied not off. Trump welcomes Sleepy Joe. You know, video of Trump singing Merry Christmas while Sleepy Joe goes viral. You know, evidently Snoop Dogg had a Sleepy Joe OG cannabis. But, you know, now he's this mean ogre. And understand, everybody yells. They use this because they got nothing else. We can't attack him for anything else. Let's just say he's mean. And they do this to women all the time. No, she's, you know what. It's, again, quite remarkable. Let's see who we got on line one. What's your name and what's on your mind?
Well, I guess it must be me.
Alice! Happy birthday. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing well. I wanted to go back to when you were talking about the Supreme Court. Did you read Mitch McConnell's editorial in the Washington Post today?
I did not. Must have missed it.
Basically, he said he didn't know why the Democrats complained because the Supreme Court votes against the things that conservatives want. And I thought, really? And that's why... we've been making all these decisions against, abortion and the EPA and everything else. It's just insane. You're going to have to read the article. I'll have to send you the link to it.
Well, please do, by all means. I'd like to see it. I mean, it's interesting to see where people's attitudes come down on this stuff. And look, at the end of the day, you know, conservatives have got what they wanted. Tax cuts for the rich. Did I mention tax cuts for the rich? And a culture war that keeps us divided so that the tax cuts that they give to the rich, we never really complain about.
Exactly. It's crazy. And I look at it this way. I think the new thing is called buy your own conservative Supreme Court justice. I think it's like a thing among the billionaires and millionaires, you know, where they buy one and then proceed to promote him and get him on the Supreme Court.
No, I mean, it starts right out of college. I mean, it's like the CIA does. They get you right out of college. You want to talk about grooming? You really want to talk about grooming? This is Clarence Thomas was groomed. Brett Kavanaugh was groomed. Oh. Samuel Alito was groomed. They were all groomed. Amy Covid Barrett, all groomed. All of them. John Roberts, you name it. All of the conservative justices groomed from day one. So they don't have to pay them for their decisions. They know what they think because they've trained them to think how they think. So is it surprising that they go with them all the time? No, it's not surprising at all. It's why they're there.
I totally agree. But you have a good evening, Rick, and I'll send you that link.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Alice. And again, happy birthday. No, my mind is very clear on this, and it should be for all of us. This is one of those things where you go, what has happened in our politics over the last 50 years is that the moneyed interest, you know, you can thank Kennedy for starting this. You start cutting tax rates down from 92% down to 70 when Kennedy was president. And it was the same thing. We're going to close the loopholes so they don't get to avoid taxes. And then right away, they start giving those loopholes back because they lobby for it. Why? Because they want more money. Reagan comes into office, takes it from 70% all the way down to 28. Because in 71, you started the Heritage Foundation out of, you know, Justice Powell, well, Lewis Powell, businessman, attorney, moderate Democrat, oddly enough. To soon to be Supreme Court Justice, and his treatise on how to save free enterprise. And how do you do that? You break up the unions, you take over the media, you destroy education, you get people to hate education, and you put out the Donald Trump figure to entertain. You get your voices out there and you flood the zone. And it's what they have done masterfully for decades. Because the moneyed interest. One of the interesting stories about I've heard about the National Review, Richard Mellon Scaife, a billionaire from the Pittsburgh area, banking billionaire, would give this group $1 million a year, said, I don't want to hear from you. I want to hear about you. Just go cause trouble. I don't care what you do. Just I want to hear about what you're doing. And they didn't have to go out there and sell ads. They didn't have to sell magazines. They didn't have to do anything other than continue to produce the right kind of content. And this is the media structure that we've been in for a very long time. It's all about billionaires funding their pet projects. And that's all about getting what they want. This is why I keep coming back to when we have the Patriotic Millionaires on. I talk about it. We need to tax the rich at an incredibly enormous amount. There should be no billionaires. But Rick, you know what happens if you become a billionaire? I will be happy to pay a 92% tax if I make $1 billion. There is a point at which you go, the kind of unimaginable wealth that the Musks and the Gates and the Bezoses and the Zuckerbergs and name the list of 1,200 people in this country who've got just obscene, outrageous amounts of wealth. And tell me that we can't get health care. Tell me that we can't make sure the kids get the best education possible. Tell me we can't fund, you name it. You know, and I go back to this Biden thing. You know, Biden's mean. You know, maybe if Obama was mean, maybe we'd have single payer instead of the Affordable Care Act, which, look, it's helped people, but we could have done so much better. I don't know if Obama was a little meaner. Maybe. Oh, I don't know. Maybe we would have gotten rid of Taft-Hartley and workers would be able to organize without having to go through the intimidation and the harassment and all of the insanity that we see. You know, just maybe, just kind of a thought. And here's the sad reality. We, the working people of this country, continue to get the short end of the stick and are going to when AI comes along and wipes everything out. You know, someone asked me today, well, do you think we'll ever get single payer? I go, I think so, at some point. At some point, we'll get single payer. And this is how. This is where my mind goes. Once AI wipes out a bunch of jobs, they're going to need guys like me to retire. They're going to need guys like me to go. So as part of the buyout package, senior workers are going to be enticed with, here, we'll give you health care to leave. Because understand, the only reason that we don't have national health care in this country, and the only reason corporate America is willing to shoulder that burden, is because they know that you're going to be tied to that job. You're not going to leave. You're not going anywhere. You need that health care. You take that away. You take that magnet away. People are going to be leaving workplaces in droves. And I believe that's going to be the first wave when AI takes over and we go, okay, well, we got to get rid of people. How do we do this? How does corporate America do it? How does corporate America get rid of senior workers when they're downsizing? First thing they do is offer a sweetener. Hey, anybody want to volunteer? Anyone want to take a buyout? Anyone want to, you know, just take this little trinket or token or whatever? This tiny little stipend, this little severance package to go away? I think we're going to see the same kind of thing. It's going to be kind of the buyout. You know, hey, we need older workers for the patriotic good of the country to keep young people in the workplace so that they can start families and you know, perpetuate the race. Start families, buy homes, do all that. So you old people, go away. Here's a little health care. Shut up. I think that's the only way we get it. And I know some of my lefty friends are going to be really angry. Rick, no, we're organizing. No, not going to happen. The moneyed interest will never let it happen. Until we, and look, I don't even have hope that we're going to overcome the kind of divisions we have right now. I don't. I think we have to find our coalitions. I think we have to get active and engaged with people, working people, to wake up to the realities that the Trumps of the world are not our saviors. They talk a good game. There's a good sales pitch. Good con men always have a good sales pitch. But there's nothing there. It's empty calories. It's bad for us. But we'll see. But remember, Joe Biden is mean. He gets angry with people, and he says mean things when he's not Sleepy Joe. And I gotta wonder, was it a sleepy thing? Is what it is. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you hear me talk about the bipartisan infrastructure bill. You hear me talk about bringing back manufacturing and how the fact that I love the fact that Biden and the administration is doing all of the things that Donald Trump said he was going to do. Look, I've said before, I think the reason especially my family voted for Donald Trump was because he sold them on the idea, we're bringing manufacturing back. We're going to bring Brook Park Avenue in Cleveland back with the Ford and the Chevy plant and all the feeder plants and all those union jobs that created solid middle-class lifestyles where one income could support a family. They want that back. So when a listener pointed out that I should look to Minnesota as part of the Minnesota miracle and how, well, the investment is flowing in there and the work being done, well, I decided, let's reach out and find out. That's why I've asked Adam Dunick to come talk with us. Adam is the Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. Adam, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate you having me on tonight.
So, we see all of the news. There's this investment out there. We see all the Biden administration saying, hey, the money's flowing out the door. But I don't think people have really seen or heard enough about what's actually being done on the ground. So tell me about the Minnesota miracle.
Sure. I mean, I think the focus was largely on jobs and on working people. And, I've been around the legislature here for a little over 20 years. We've seen a lot of ups and downs and different landscapes. I guess first I want to say we have to go back to the 70s to what was originally termed, the good life in Minnesota, the former Governor Wendell Anderson on the cover of Time magazine saying we do things differently here in Minnesota, and this is how we set ourselves apart. And a lot of that legislation back in the 70s really set Minnesota on the course for the next 40 or 50 years. But I think what we've seen now in the last 10 or 15 years is pent up energy of how do we continue to do progressive things to help working families and working people. And there are ideas that range from earned sick and safe time to paid family and medical leave, to all kinds of safety legislation to protect workers on the job site, plus a lot of a policy that did things like banned captive audience meetings and got rid of non-compete clauses. So on the employer-employee relationship, anything that has to do with workers and management, it helped to, in the eyes of those of us fighting for working people, help the balance a little bit more in favor of workers. And that came from a lot of different ways. It came from organizers and union members and people stepping up from the grassroots level. It also came from elected leaders who stood up for working people. And then I also say it came from, I think, some momentum around how do we set Minnesota apart from other states that are frankly going the other direction. I only have to look to the south to look at a state like Iowa, who lowered the working age to 14 years old. They said to themselves, the way to solve our crisis around workforce is to let more children into the workforce, which we've seen has had a really detrimental effect around the country.
Yeah, and in Wisconsin.
So I think there was a lot of momentum.
Yeah, and Wisconsin had a deadly effect here recently. I mean, this is one of those moments, as I've been saying for a while, used to be when my grandparents' generation ruled the workforce, one income could support a family. Then, the last 40 years, you've needed two to survive. Now, sadly, I think we're moving to the era of three incomes just to get by, which is why, again, when I look at Minnesota and all of the things that you've laid out, hey, Democrats, maybe look to what they're doing in Minnesota as a national policy. Let's do a lot of those things. But it does center around government investment, I believe. You know, the money coming into your state to build roads and bridges and new factories and those things. That's a central part of this, isn't it?
It really is. I think it's a kind of a combination of those two things. It's the investments into the state and investments into its people, and the policies and help will guide that investment. And so that's why we always focus on both jobs and labor standards. And I think those two things together, the jobs piece is huge. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure money from the IIJA, the Investment and Jobs Act from the federal government, as well as the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the CHIPS Act. That was something that even here in Minnesota, we had a fund that was created to match these CHIPS projects, these microchip and semiconductor plants. We have five or six of these plants looking to expand. These in and of themselves, these projects alone would potentially be hundreds of millions of dollars in investments. And we had a great roundtable last week. Senator Klobuchar was here with the Secretary of Commerce, Secretary Gina Raimondo, to meet with some of the chips manufacturers, to meet with labor. And frankly, the question was asked, how are we going to staff up? How are we going to put the workers in the positions both to build these projects and then staff the jobs in the ongoing production part of the projects as well? And that's our challenge. Our challenge is really going to be, how do we recruit people? How do we make sure that people have the right education to get into these jobs? How do we make sure that folks know that working in the trades can be a great career?
No, I mean, look, I've been talking about this for a very long time, since Biden took office. Bidenomics is all about getting working people back to work. It's about reshoring manufacturing and giving communities identities again. We did a tour, and I've talked about this a lot. Back in October and November last year, where we went to places that used to be, Toledo used to be the glass capital, Clair, Wisconsin used to be known for rubber. There are all these places that those factories are long gone. The identity is long gone. And what's replaced it in a lot of places, sadly, is the local hospital is the biggest employer, along with the drug treatment center. And that kind of environment is not conducive for a good economy. Bring in a factory, bring in some of this investment, bring those jobs to replace roads and bridges and energy projects and all of this stuff to create a strong working class so that money reverberates. That's to me the way forward. And this is why I think what Biden's doing is so important.
I couldn't agree more. I think the two economic models that have been in competition have been, I like to describe it as it's the Ford model versus the Walmart model. Ford being, how do we pay the workers enough that they can buy the vehicles that they make, or do we just cut prices and cut wages and try to drive those standards down? And so sometimes these things get into conflict. We strongly believe that here in Minnesota, paying people well, giving them good benefits, that isn't just giveaways. We're not like when someone gets paid family and medical leave, that isn't just some freebie and then people live off that. That's actually an incentive to be in the workforce, to have a family, to then be able to come back to a job. We want paid family medical leave for construction workers, because if we recruit women to join the trades, we don't want them to just work until they have babies and then not come back to the job. We want them to have a long-term career. So how do we start viewing these policies as net positive winners for business and for labor? Yeah. I think that's a real important part of the story.
I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Adam Dunick. He's the Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, northcountrycarpenters.org, the website, if you want to take a look at that. Now, we talked about during the break about, some of the sectors and some of the things that are being done. Energy is a big part. Transportation's a big part. Obviously roads and bridges. How much of this stuff's going on in your state, and do you have the workforce to meet the demand? I mean, you're gonna have to bring in outside people. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's big. When you look at just the state of Minnesota's budget, there is a big surplus. So a lot of money got spent in one-time funds. Energy comes to mind. Housing was another one, hundreds of millions of dollars in housing infrastructure bonds and housing investments. Transportation, roads and bridges. We had a bigger transportation bill this year than we had 15 years ago. We passed another large transportation bill. That was about $9 billion over 10 years. That'll be matched by federal funds as well. So you add all these things up, plus some economic development funds. It's around $15 to $17 billion that we're looking at for the next 10 years. I saw the Speaker of the House here, Melissa Horn, was quoted in a story saying, "We are rolling out the red carpet to come be a construction worker in the state. We want you to come work here. So if you grow up here and live here, great. And if you move in somewhere else, that's even better." So it's a combination of how do we recruit the folks that are here? How do we retain the people that get into the industry? What are we doing? We're doing kind of everything. It's career fairs. It's being in high schools. It's doing outreach to know that career and tech education is an option. You don't need to go to a four-year college. You're actually sometimes better off going into a trade program when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, rather than waiting for it to be a second or third career. So it's an aggressive outreach program. It's also aimed at, like I said earlier, women, people of color, veterans. We have presence in all these places, in all these communities, and the carpenters are active in those spaces. I know the other building trades unions are as well. It's going to take a lot of people to recruit folks to create these jobs, but we expect there to be a big growth in over a long period of time.
Yeah, no. There's
the other thing I'll quick add is we already needed to recruit people just to replace the retirements, just the baby boomers that are retiring already. So whatever we were doing on recruitment, it's almost like we have to double or triple those efforts.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I mean, you know, there was for a large number of years, there was a stigma on, you know, people working, you know, evidently, you know, we look down on people who work with their hands or take a shower at the end of the day. Do you see that changing with parents? I mean, I think back to my grandfather who said, look, if you become a truck driver like me, I'll consider you a failure, because he wanted something better. And I think that generation did that to their kids and their grandkids. Do you see that turning around where parents are going, look, like I'm doing with my son. I think getting into the building trades is a great job. It's going to teach you a career. You're going to have skills that are portable. It's a great opportunity. You're not going to be in debt for a lifetime. Do you see that turning around?
I really do. I think it's all those things combined. I think it's the fact that it is a little bit more known what a lucrative career could be. I do think that there's less of a stigma around it. It's not so much, oh, you're just going to go do that if you can't do something else. But I also think the onus is on us to make it an attractive job and a right career. So we try to train people to become foremen and superintendents and move up in their companies and really kind of make it into the type of career so that they don't feel like all I'm doing is going to do concrete or wood frame or drywall the rest of my life and just kind of wash, rinse, and repeat. How can I see this as a stepping stone to something else? And so we talked to our members about, hey, maybe someday you'll be a contractor yourself. You'll run your own business. And I think that kind of approach to construction is an important one as well. You know, it's always going to be a challenge, I think, to get people to work hard or show up early or kind of maybe juggle the challenges. And I think that's one thing we have to think about. Childcare can be an issue. So some of our members are asked to be at the job site at 6 o'clock. Well, is a childcare provider open at 5:30 to drop their sons or daughters off for daycare? Not always. And so how do we kind of build some of these other systems around in society too that support these type of working class jobs? And construction is not the only career like that. I know people in law enforcement have those challenges. People that work in healthcare have same shift challenges and timing. But I think we, to answer your question, I think we've made a lot of progress on this front. The more we talk about it, you know, what we really want is we don't just want construction to be a career you get into because you knew somebody else who did it. How do we get beyond that reach of just only knowing somebody that worked construction? How do we get it so that something somebody wants to do in an everyday scenario?
No, it's the reason I didn't get into the building trades. Now, back when I was in high school, they were really difficult to get into, and you had to know somebody. Because there were that many people trying to get in. We're in a moment now where, as you've pointed out, there's a lot of work. There's going to be a lot of work because of the legislation that Biden and the Democrats have gotten through. There's a lot of opportunities, and it's good stuff. And here's the really important part for parents. And, you know, one of my ideas, while you're learning this trade, you're actually getting paid. They're paying you. You're not paying them. That seems reasonable.
Absolutely. I mean, our biggest selling point is to have our apprentices that have been through the program say, look, I just came up with a down payment on my house, or look, I have a new pickup truck, or look, I have this financial freedom I didn't have before because I'm earning a good wage right off the bat, and I don't have that college debt hanging over my head. That's earn while you learn is a big piece of what we try to talk to folks about. The other thing I'll just quick add to is career and tech ed school teaching in the school is a real important point here. And more high schools are getting there. We work on that here at the Carpenters. I know some other trades do as well. Just making sure that that's an option for them to see themselves in a classroom working with their hands. Because if you've never had a shop class, which frankly, a lot less of them exist today than there were 30 or 40 years ago. But we're trying to bring some of that back. Yeah. And those, I think, are whether a superintendent, it clicks for them, or certain school board members are taking it upon themselves. We just need to keep having those conversations.
No, and the great thing, as I explained to my kid, I'm like, I don't know where to point you. AI and robotics and all of the future is coming. It's coming quickly. I don't know which jobs are going to be wiped out first, although, you know, there have been reports that say, you know, half the jobs we do right now will be gone in 15 years. I don't think these are the ones that are going to be first taken out. I see at some point, you know, some things down the road, but these are jobs you're going to have for a while.
No question about it. Technology will always change our industry slightly in terms of the tools people use or how things get built and produced and done mass and that sort of thing. But construction work is going to be here for the long term. And we welcome people with open arms. Honestly, the top qualities we need in people are hard work, high energy, good enthusiasm. Anybody is teachable. And sometimes we get people that have done some carpentry on their own or done it through the military or through tech school or something. You know, we can always build on those skills, but frankly, the biggest thing is wanting to work hard and have a good career.
So last question I've got for you, anybody in Wisconsin and in our listening audience in Wisconsin or in Minneapolis, if they wanted their kids or they wanted to join up, they wanted to get into one of these apprenticeship programs, how do they do that?
They should call their local union hall or come check out our training center. Almost all of our training centers through our Carpenters Training Institute have weekly open houses. Come in, meet an instructor. They'll walk you through it. We are always recruiting. We don't just take people in the spring or as the season's beginning. We're taking people on a year-round basis. So definitely reach out to us. Come check us out through our website, and somebody will be returning that phone call because we're, like I said, we're at the point where we're taking everybody we can get to train them up and get them into a career in construction.
There you go.
Couldn't be more excited about the opportunity.
NorthCountryCarpenter.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Adam Dunick, I appreciate you taking some time for me. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Appreciate the opportunity.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, I love this. I love this. This is so, so Republican right here. This is one of those things where, now remember, you know, the conspiracy theorists and all of the, you know, we've got the smoking gun. You got Comer, the congressman from Kentucky. You remember the spiel about, you know, we've got Joe Biden, we've got him by the, you know, the snarklies. Tweet from the U.S. Attorney of the Southern District of New York. U.S. Attorney announces charges against co-director of think tank for acting as an unregistered foreign agent, trafficking in arms, violating U.S. sanctions against Iran, and making false statements to federal agents. Now, remember, Representative Comer swore they had a witness. They had a whistleblower. He was going to blow the lid off of, you know, Hunter Biden and Joe and the laptop. He had it. And the IRS, it was going to be huge, bigger than Watergate. Bigger than Watergate. And they had him until, well, they didn't. And then they lost their whistleblower. They didn't know where he was. No idea where their whistleblower went. And they kind of looked stupid for a little while. Because how do you lose your whistleblower? How do you lose them? How do they just disappear to where a congressman doesn't know? Well, we now find out from the U.S. Attorney of the Southern District of New York, because evidently this co-director of this think tank, acting as a unregistered foreign agent, trafficking in arms and violating U.S. sanctions against Iran and making false statements to the federal officials and all that stuff, that's their whistleblower. Turns out, been arrested. Oops. Who could have known? Who could have known that, according to the indictment, this guy, Gal Luft, agreed to covertly recruit and pay on behalf of principals based in China, a former high-ranking government official, including in 2016, while the official was an advisor to then-President-elect Trump. Allegedly, he is a somebody working with the Chinese. Selling arms, doing all kinds of stuff. According to the U.S. Attorney Damian Williams, as alleged, Gal Luft, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen and co-head of a Maryland think tank, engaged in multiple serious criminal schemes. He subverted foreign agent registration laws in the United States to seek to promote Chinese policies by acting through a former high-ranking U.S. government official. He acted as a broker in deals for dangerous weapons and Iranian oil and told multiple lies about his crimes to law enforcement. So he's been charged with a bunch of crimes. Violations of the Arms Export Control Act, could get 20 years for that. Violations of the, another one of those, you know, up to 20 years. Another one of those, up to 20 years, making false statements, up to 5. Conspiracy to violate International Emergency Economic Powers Act, 20 years. This guy's facing, like, you know, 150-odd years. Now, I had someone email me and say, but, you know, this is Biden going and getting them. And I find it interesting that, you know, it's this guy was doing this on behalf of the Chinese, because I've been told that the Chinese wanted Biden. And, you know, it's all this... You know, they were against Trump. And then you find out, you know, it's cozy. And this is where my mind goes back to. It's all about the money. It's all about these think tanks and all about the cash that flows through them and the context of all of these people. Now, someone said, you know, well, you do know the Russia hoax. That wasn't a Russian hoax. You know, there was no collusion. No, I never said there was collusion. I said there was cooperation. I said there was cooperation. I said there was corroboration. I said there was a lot of C words of, but not collusion, because these people are all in the same cesspool. These moneyed, you know, you got Rudy Giuliani, who worked for the Mujahideen Khalq. You've got all of these people working for the Saudis. You got all these people working for all of these different groups who, it's all about the money. And I go back to, you know, if we had a really high tax rate where you tax the you-know-what out of these people, maybe this stuff doesn't happen. But then again, I look at our Supreme Court. Maybe you don't have to pay them. You're just going to give them things and trips and houses and all kinds of stuff. But I do find it interesting. I find it very interesting that the whistleblower, an associate of a former Trump official, working for the Chinese. I find it interesting. I find it interesting that these folks are where they are. And the question then becomes, how do we get to the bottom of this, and how do you sort out the rats? How do you get rid of the garbage? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love this one. This is good. Carrie Lake. I think Carrie Lake is delusional. And I've said, you know, for a while now, she's not going to be Trump's VP. I know she's aiming for that. But it was interesting to see Carrie Lake, you know, basically saying she hasn't been dumped. She said, I know they just try to make things from scratch. Nothing is true. They attack the people who are exposing the truth. When they are attacking me, it makes me feel good. And it's because, you know, everyone's saying, yeah, Trump wants her out the door. Doesn't want anything to do with her. And look, reality. Let reality sink in. Trump is never, never going to put himself with someone who's going to outshine him. It's never going to happen, which is why he picked Milquetoast Pence to be his vice president. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Nay. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Yes, thank you, Rick.
So do you agree? Do you think I'm right that Trump's not going to pick someone who would outshine him?
Well, he's never going to pick her. I mean, it's just absolutely not going to happen. And, you know, the people were asking, has he really turned on her, on Carrie Lake? And I'm not sure how much she outshines anybody. That's my opinion.
Okay. All right. She's a good-looking woman, gathers a lot of attention.
That's true.
I fear that he's, you know, I believe he would never put himself in that, but we'll see how it plays out.
I mean, she's been in his corner. She's election-denying, horrible. She called herself that, actually, by the way.
She's bought, sold. She's all that.
She went after Fauci, and so she's got all the right credentials for him. But I don't know. Maybe he does think she would outshine. Now, he was encouraged to take Pence, and I can tell you why, by people. Now, he took him for a different reason. He took Pence, but he was encouraged by the insiders because Pence at least knew how the government ran.
Yeah,
and they thought Pence would have some power to actually keep the engines running, and obviously he didn't.
No, that's why I said he was milquetoast. There was nothing. There was literally nothing there. Speaking of nothing there, Tommy Tuberville, the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, evidently he's digging even further on this blockade of military promotions, to where actually we now have, and I don't know how big a deal this is, but there's no Senate confirmed commandant of the Marine Corps for the first time in over a century.
Yeah, in over 164 years. Yeah, that long. First time in 164 years, the Marine Corps does not have a leader. And General David Berger relinquished command, and that was Monday. He had some kind of, you know, private ceremony, I think, at the barracks in Washington, D.C. And Tuberville is blocking more than 250 fast-track military promotions in the Senate. 250 fast-track promotions. He's blocking them.
And why? Again, remember, these are supposed to be the people who are the pro-military people. These are the people who, every time they see somebody in uniform, they run for a photo op. They wrap themselves in the flag. I mean, I'm. Why? Why? What could be so bad that the dumbest guy in the Senate would take this and make this his stand?
Well, let's see. we could say it's because that the military has not carried out procedures of military awareness. We could say that. We could make that up, is what I'm saying. We could say that, you know, the top brass really hasn't been up on all the latest technology. We could say that. But building up to this, it's very easy what happened. The good senator is angry because the Pentagon has a new policy that pays for travel and time off for service members that they must take to receive an abortion if the state where they are stationed does not allow the procedure. And it's the Pentagon's post-Dobbs abortion policy. And so for that reason, for the first time in 164 years, and 250 other fast-track promotions are not occurring.
What is that? I'm confused. Help me here. I'm really confused. What do these promotions of these career people, what does that have to do with abortions? Why is this the battleground he's choosing? I mean, I don't think you know either, but why this? What would this do to make that not happen? I mean, I understand maybe holding up some appropriation, maybe a little bit of money here or there. I mean, maybe I can see that, but this? Why this?
And that's why I made up, you know, the hypotheticals in the beginning, because, you know, maybe it would be something really, really serious.
Some,
you know,
people say.
One would say, hey, you're a mess from top and bottom. But because they didn't follow the abortion policy he wants, he has, you know, dug in, said his stance again about his opposition to this policy. And he said that the administration, this is all Biden's fault for these 250 people and the head of the Marines, because the administration needs to stop breaking the law, quote. And he says, because you're doing this, I'm going to keep my hold. I'm going to keep it until the Pentagon follows the law or changes the law. It's that simple. And so what he is doing is putting our entire national security, seriously.
Yeah.
He is putting it at risk. I don't care, you know, if it was, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-gun, anti-gun. You don't take a decision within the military of something that is a social issue anyway, that has nothing to do with the alertness and readiness of our military, and then hold them hostage for it. I'm shocked that somebody doesn't try to, you know, hit some sense into him.
Literally.
We've got, you know, look what we've got going on around the world.
Yeah.
We've got Russia in the Ukraine. You got China, you know, doing all their maneuvers around Taiwan. So we've got disruption in the Mideast.
South Korea.
Holding up 250 fast-track promotions. Now, why are a lot of those fast-track? Because people have left those positions. Other people are ready and are prepared to be in those positions. And those positions, many of them, I don't know how many of the 250, I promise you, a great portion of them are what we would put into the critical column.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe that, you know, McConnell and everybody else in the Senate is just letting him sit there and do this with no pressure on him.
But see, but this is where I come back to, Bob, and I hate to be this jaded, but I my mind's in this place that they're going to let Tuberville do this so that the appearance of weakness is there. Because globally, we've, you know, the appearance is that Biden's ineffectual, that he's weak. That's what they're trying to promote. That's what this kind of infighting, this kind of stuff projects. And I fear that someone goes, look, they're weak, they're ineffective. They can't even put, you know, someone in charge of their Marine Corps, let alone use it. And I fear something bad comes of this. And, you know, I'm in this weird struggle of a moment because, man, I never thought we would get to this point. You know, that old saying, our differences, you know, stop at the water's edge. Not anymore.
Well, yeah, we never know when something will happen. We had a 9-1-1 here. History, you know, history shows that you don't know what's going to happen. And what amazes me is that Tuberville doesn't get it through his head. Maybe the heads of the national organization is all happy, but he needs to get it through his head. There's a lot of people out there, Marines, veterans, who may be completely anti-abortion, but they will not be favorable to this type of, no. of threat to our military preparedness.
No,
not over any issue.
No, and look, I don't even see the end game, and this is my problem. I keep coming back to this. I can see it withholding some funding somewhere to go, hey, we're not going to let any funding go to this. And I can understand that. This makes no sense, which, again, why I call him the dumbest guy in the Senate.
Yeah, well, he's just totally patronizing. And, again, he's not patronizing. He thinks that he's getting accolades from people who are against abortion but are pro-military. If he thinks because of this one policy, I mean, how many abortions would there be in the military right now, to be frank about
it's just, you know? It's crazy. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. You helped write the Help America Vote Act, right?
I was the author.
You're the guy. So you can help me with this.
Okay.
the governor of North Dakota, Republican Governor Doug Burgum, it's being reported that he is allegedly paying people $20 in gift cards to donate $1 to his presidential campaign. You then go to Vivek Ramaswamy, who evidently is paying people to go out and I guess get people just to donate to make it look like he's getting more people. I'm struggling with this. When does this become, I'll just pay you for your vote?
Well, now, of course, now that, what you just mentioned, I thought it was something to do with the Help America Vote Act.
Voting guy. You're the guy who, you thought all this stuff through. Shouldn't this be illegal?
Well, I mean, this was never an issue when we wrote the Help America Vote Act, it was, the issue of the provisional ballots and the computerization and what the states would be able to, do. And of course, very limited voter ID in it, providing your last four of your Social Security. But as far as, all the nuances that pop up, which this is kind of a new one, I haven't heard about this before, that was never, ever raised as an issue back there. And there's no... The Elections Commission we created, Steny Hoyer and I authored the bill, and then the main people were Dodd, Kennedy, and McConnell in the Senate for us. But the Elections Commission that we created, it strictly has to do with the machines. Now, if these two candidates were paying, within the machines, the poll workers, something of that nature,
right,
it could get popped to that commission, to take a look at it. But I would think this is I think this is something that would have to go under the FEC, Federal Elections Commission itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these. I saw these stories and I'm going, man, this is evidently Vivek Ramaswamy's launching Vivek Kitchen Cabinet, and he's you go out and raise him money, he gives you 10% of the take.
Wow, yeah, that's clearly under. It's not under the HAVA Elections Commission. There's two different ones. Elections Commission created under HAVA, and then there's the Federal Elections Commission, which I had oversight over with House Administration, and that deals with all the campaign nuances. And I would say that's a perfect place that somebody should or probably will file on this thing.
They should. I mean, this is it's incredible to me. But this, again, when you give people, when these people have all this kind of money and this kind of wealth to throw around, they find creative ways to subvert the system. And the reason I asked you about and set it up as part of the Help of America Vote Act is you studied all of the all of the different election stuff. I'm setting you up as the expert here. You're smarter than me on this stuff. But as a dumb truck driver, I look at this and I go, this is wrong.
I thought maybe it was something that fit, under the HAVA, which this wouldn't, but it clearly, and I also oversaw the Federal Elections Commission, so I oversaw the commission that, decides election violations. So, yeah, I am pretty familiar with you know, with items. And you basically cannot, it's improper to buy votes. So I would think somebody's going to make a filing to the FEC.
Yeah, I sure hope so.
I would assume on this.
And, but here's the thing. Here's my problem with this. What's the penalty? Slap right on the wrist, couple of fines. What's the penalty? Anybody going to jail over this?
No.
Never.
Nobody will go to jail over it. They will be told that they have had an improper procedure and they must cease and desist, and they will claim ignorance on it, because you really can't fight the FEC in trying to do some kind of appeal. They're going to make a decision.
Yeah.
But they will claim ignorance on it, and, you know, they didn't know, and they're new candidates, blah, blah, blah. Their treasurer didn't tell them. No, nobody will pay. In fact, Rick, the biggest thing that would happen here probably is a cease and desist versus a penalty even.
Not even a fine. Jeez. Jeez. You know, remember when they said crime doesn't pay? You remember that? I remember that as a kid. They said, you know, crime doesn't pay because, you know, all this other bad stuff. Evidently it does.
I guess it does. Well, as long as they get away with it, which is the worst part of it.
Crazy.
I mean, he's offering a commission.
Yeah. No, you go out and raise me some money, I'll give you a kickback.
The only way you can do that, if you have a fundraiser and that fundraiser has signed a contract with you. Now, this is common occurrence. The fundraising unit can, in fact, be given a percentage, if it's a deal struck in writing, a percentage. Now, he's not making that deal in writing with, you know, both sides signing of people out there that are donating. So it would have to be one entity like, you know, his hired consultant who gets a percentage, and that's how they get paid. But you can't just do it with people out there.
Wow. Lastly, I got to get your thought on this. You know, Turkey, I guess, has agreed to let Sweden join NATO. Is this a big deal for Biden?
Yes, it is. But, you know, Turkey just, it's amazing. I mean, it was Hungary and Turkey that were objecting. Last year, if I remember right, Turkey objected somebody else last year. Now they objected this year. And it takes some nudging. But you got to take Turkey serious on this because, you know, they could want all kinds of things. So I think it's a plus, the fact that before the president left, Turkey wasn't amenable. It's a big deal. Sweden needs to go in there. When a country like Sweden asks to go in NATO, you can bet they're starting to get terrified over in Europe. So, it's a good victory.
Yeah, no, but no Ukraine. Interestingly enough, Biden not supportive yet.
Yeah, it's in the middle of a war. And also, if they let it in at this point in time, there would be, I think, some decisions NATO would have to make about no-fly zones, et cetera. But because it's in the middle of a war, it's not to go in yet.
Makes sense. As always, Bob, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1902. A powerful gas and dust explosion occurred in the Rolling Mill Mine in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Johnstown was rich in coal resources. The coal industry in Cambria County gradually grew thanks to the rise of the industry in the region. The first large-scale mining in Cambria County occurred in 1856, when the newly formed Cambria Iron Company opened the Rolling Mill Mine. Most of the miners who were killed were recent immigrants from Central and Eastern Europe. 110 miners were killed in the explosion. The explosion was caused by fire damp.
a term used by miners to mean a mixture of methane gas. Miners working in one section of the mine were killed immediately, while many other miners were killed by after damp, an asphyxiating gas that spread through the mine as the miners tried to flee to the only other exit from the mine. The mine reopened on July 14th. However, the disaster devastated the immigrant community in Johnstown and prompted calls for investigations and greater mine safety measures. The rolling mill mine continued to operate until 1931. In the mine's latter years, it was part of the Bethlehem Mines Corporation. The rolling mill mine disaster still ranks as one of the deadliest mining accidents in the history of mining in this country. There are still mine disasters to this day. In March of 2015, there was a deadly mine collapse at the Murray Energy Coal Mine in Marshall County, West Virginia. Thus, we remember that all workers deserve to work in a safe environment.
Come on, you young fella, so brave and so fine.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show.
Way down in the mine.
Gotta love when you don't do basic, simple things in a campaign. Evidently, a candidate for U.S. Senate in Montana, Tim Sheehy, Republican, evidently his campaign, as part of their support for agriculture. You know, got to support the agriculture, folks. Got to focus the farms. So you're going to want a picture with, you know, sunny green pastures. You're going to want nice grazing cattle. You're going to want that kind of stuff. And they went and they got that picture. Problem is, it wasn't taken in Montana, taken in Kentucky. So I know, Rick, you know, you're just taking stock images. If you're going to be running for something in Montana, shouldn't you do something that people recognize as, I don't know, Montana? Now, evidently, he used another photograph used to illustrate his support for border security. And interestingly enough, the picture was taken in Russia. So there's some problems with that. I look at RFK Jr. had that same problem, interestingly enough. New ad campaign put out by the Club for Growth folks. They are saying Trump is unelectable. They're spending $3.6 million to go after Trump. Going to spend that in weird places. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, if they were to come to me and say, would you run this ad? I might take Club for Growth money just because I agree with them on this issue. Now, I think you know, Biden can beat him, but I still always worry. Now, you know, Trump's not doing himself any favors. He's ticked off the Club for Growth folks. Now, I guess he's ticked off Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds as he's criticized her for not endorsing in the Republican primary. You know, even though she did, you know, hang around with DeSantis a little bit, which is interesting. He says, look, I endorsed her, did big rallies, and she won. Now she wants to remain neutral. I don't invite her to events. DeSantis is down 45 points. He's not wrong. He's mad at her, and he's mad at Nevada, too. He said, I think I won the last time. I think I won both times by a lot. This state is disgraceful because he lost Nevada. yeah. And speaking of Trump, there's Trump-like. One of my favorite Trump-like stories of the day is Steve Bannon. Remember Steve Bannon? The guy who cheated a bunch of people out of you know, money down. You're going to build the wall. Send me money. Going to build the wall. Evidently, you know, with his various legal problems, he owes his former attorneys about $500,000. And according to reports, he stiffed them. That's a very Trump thing to do. Very, very. And speaking of Bannon, evidently ProPublica is again reporting some right-wing malfeasance. They are claiming that all of these right-wing websites are basically scamming their loyal followers. And I got to tell you, I read that headline, you go, scamming loyal followers. I'm going, and? It's what they do. It's how these right-wing groups have so much money. It's how they have the ability to do all of this propaganda stuff. It's how it's done on the right wing side of things. They're forever cheating people. You know, kind of like Bannon, kind of like Trump himself, kind of like all of them. And this is the weird thing for me because, you know, I know people who have been fleeced and yet still flying the flag. I mean, that's the weird thing of where we are in this day. The flock never runs out of the ability to be fleeced. And finally, Elon. I remember when Elon challenged Zuckerberg to a cage fight, you know, billionaires to the death. And I said, look, I hope they beat the living tar out of each other. I hope they beat each other so senseless they never utter another word. Evidently, and I'm not making this up, evidently Musk doesn't want a cage match. He wants to do probably the gayest thing ever. He wants to measure up. He wants the two of them to literally measure up. And I wonder if they're going to oil up first. No, that's a DeSantis ad. Never mind. But wow. Wow. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Would you pay to see that instead of the cage match? If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.